Welcome to Fresh Voices of Legal Tech. I am Mercedes Brown, ILTA's UK Community Engagement Manager, and today we're going to meet new voices in legal technology who will showcase and educate the future of the legal landscape and have a little fun. Let's meet today's guests. I am here virtually, I should add, with Joy Heath-Rush and Rebecca Baker. Joy and Becky, first of all, how are you?
Doing great. We're all making the best of the situation we're in and looking forward to what 2021 holds for us.
Agreed. Becky?
Definitely. I'm not doing too bad either. I'm really enjoying the Indian summer that we've got in the UK at the moment. I was loving the sunshine in lockdown. It made it so much easier to bear. So I'm enjoying the last bit of sunshine.
Absolutely. I think you should make the most of it because we do not know when and how that tide will turn. Brilliant. So we know you're all good. Can you take turns to tell me about your current position and what you do?
So my role at the moment is I'm global editor of The Legal Technologist, which is a legal technology and innovation online magazine. Now I've been doing that for about 2 years with our wonderful founder, Mark May. The other side of my career is I've been building up to qualifying as a solicitor. So I've been a paralegal for a couple of years, and probably by the time your listeners hear this, I will have started my training contract. So it's exciting times at the moment.
Congratulations once again, Becky.
Thank you.
Joy?
Well, first of all, I have to say congratulations to Becky because that's awesome. Fantastic. I am the CEO of the International Legal Technology Association, and a lot of that this year has been figuring out how we take an organization that spends a lot of time doing in-person events and turning that into one that's a more virtual organization. So that's definitely created some challenges this year, but I've been around the legal tech industry for probably longer than Becky's been alive. I had my first job in legal technology in 1982. And if that is before you were born, just don't tell me because I don't want to know.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Becky, what was that?
My lips are sealed, Joy.
She will find you. Brilliant. So those were fantastic introductions, ladies. Thank you so much. Joy, I'd love to hear more comments from you about what do you think entering the legal market would be like now in comparison to what it used to be? And knowing that, what experiences did you find useful whilst you were on your journey?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's interesting when you look at women in legal technology. We often consider that women are underrepresented, and I think they certainly are, especially in security and a few other areas, or senior leadership roles are very much underrepresented. But women in my generation, and I'm in my early 60s, there are actually a fair number of us that were in legal technology, and I hate to say this, but one of the reasons is because we could type. In the early days of legal technology, and we're talking now into the early to middle 1980s, most of the technology was word processing. And so if you had a kind of a technology bent and interested in learning new things and you could type, it positioned you very well to go into this brave new world where the first automation was really around document creation and document editing, which was what law firms are doing. So I think it's understanding what skills are required at any given moment is really important, and then leveraging those skills to advance your career. Like one of the areas that's really emerging right now is data science, data analytics. That's a very fruitful area, I think, for people who are interested in getting into legal technology. Of course, artificial intelligence. There are some advances in blockchain technology. So it's thinking about what specific skill needs to be brought to bear at this particular point and then pursuing that skill. And then I think for me, the secret always to my success is understanding that I have customers. Everybody has customers. Whether you're like when I started my career and I was working in document processing, I had lots of customers, which were the lawyers and the secretaries. As a CEO, I have lots of customers, my members, our business partners, but everybody has customers. And if you focus on the fact that you have customers and you really dedicate yourself to serving those customers to the best of your ability, that's going to help you be successful wherever you are. But first you have to turn that corner to understanding that you have customers, and whatever your job is, customer service is part of it.
Joy, that's really interesting, because I was going to add that when you're at the beginning, the very threshold of starting your career, you're often leaning towards how do I make a big splash? And you never sort of think about serving, you just think about getting noticed. So it's really interesting. And were there certain instances where how did you figure out who your customers are beyond maybe your immediate team?
Yeah, that's a great question. And they're the customers that will come to you and they'll identify themselves. You know, they come to you asking for a specific service. But I think customer service goes to the next level when you think about your skills and how you can contribute in your organization. So for example, when I was around when marketing departments were created in law firms, you know, this was in the early 90s, really, when marketing started to surface as really a specialty in law firm operations. And I had spent a lot of time doing word processing and helped lawyers do slides for presentations and all that kind of thing. And when the marketing department started, I reached out to the marketing person and said, look, I have these skills. I bet we can work together. You know, here's a way that I think I can help you. One of the things that I often advise CIOs to do is to read their own marketing for their firms. You know, what kinds of matters is your organization highlighting? What kinds of lateral partners are you bringing over? What kinds of engagements are you taking? And then a good leader can go to the head of that practice group and say, look, I see that you're taking on these matters in this area. There's a really interesting piece of technology I think that you could use to help you in supporting your work on these matters. Because that indicates an understanding of the business and takes customer service to the next level.
I wholeheartedly agree. Becky, what does this mean to you? Just jumping on from Joy's comments about knowing your customer and investing in that and delivering to that customer based on your own kind of assets as a professional.
I completely agree with Joy. And it's really encouraging actually to hear that emphasis, especially in the legal technology space. Funnily enough, in terms of my career journey, customer service is one of the things that really shaped what I wanted to do. My mother was actually a sales rep for IBM, so the technology angle there was already germinating. It always inspired me when I was younger to hear her talk about her empathy with her customers and how she helped them solve their problems by, as Joy said, listening incredibly carefully and matching the solutions she had to their problems. And that's what basically made me want to be a lawyer in the first place, was that solving people's problems and essentially making their business lives better. Legal technology was so exciting for me because it's making the service even better again. And as Joy said, if you can know the business of the law firm that you're in and say, look, are there some technology I think that could really make our clients' lives better, then that's incredibly powerful. And that's what excites me most about having access to the legal technology space, is this access to solutions and solving problems for people. So I completely agree with Joy. If we can keep that emphasis on customer service and empathy, I think we can't go far wrong.
Thank you, Becky, for that. And that brings me to a very interesting angle to both your conversations, which is about knowing the business. Becky, what's interesting about your background is you've actually created an outlet to get access to this knowledge that we're talking about. And it's more about the practical knowledge capital that you can build so you can have that portfolio of services and skills that are used within your sector. And I'm keen to understand or hear more about how you both stay informed on updates relevant to your areas of expertise. Because Joy, a CEO, is there any end to the list of things you need to know about? And Becky, a lawyer, how do you even begin to anticipate what you might find on your desk every morning? So are there any, you know, habits that you have which help you curate your expertise as you go along?
I mean, I haven't yet started my legal career properly yet, but I can definitely talk about how I've curated my learnings in the legal technology space. In the very beginning, it was actually very much down to chance about access to the legal technology world in the first place. It was all about the people I met and their willingness to guide me. And I was quite shocked by the fact that if I hadn't have met this particular lawyer who introduced me to the world of blockchain and the world of legal technology, I would never have known. I would never have had that access point. So that's why working with a legal technologist is so important to me, is because I want to give access and knowledge to those who like me wouldn't have otherwise accessed it except by chance. But in terms of keeping up with updates and curating the sources that I get my knowledge from, I think the main thing for me is being extremely selective about how I keep up to date. Over the last few months, I've been quite carefully sifting the sources that I use and the people that I get the information from. I'm very lucky as editor that I get to see everything that comes across our editing table. And it's fantastic to see the sources of knowledge that people have. But ultimately, in terms of creating your knowledge sources, it often comes down to first principles. There's a lot of hype in the legal technology space, and it can be hard to get reliable information. So having sources that you trust and you know are as objective as possible is always the first priority for me. And it also helps narrow things down. So in terms of volume, it helps me cut out what I think I can't quite rely on. Having said that, it's important to be on the bleeding edge of development. So I'm always looking out for opportunities or flashes of inspiration or future products that I think might be important. So my antenna and my intuition are always on the lookout as well.
The hype can certainly be very intimidating to someone that's quite new. So it's great to hear that you're not saying that there's a specific outlet. You just have to keep going and try and get it. Like as you did, you met a lawyer that introduced you to the space. So it's great to engage with the individuals behind these products and solutions and kind of work your way to understanding the types of technology in your own space and time.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. And speaking to the people behind the products is always going to be an inspiring experience, listening to how they do their work and hearing about the really innovative products and services that are out there. So I completely agree, Mercedes.
And you have to ask questions. We're talking about questions, Joy.
Well, questions are key. I mean, I think that when you're a leader, one of the traits you really need to value, and I think we don't always value, is curiosity. And not inappropriate curiosity, like why was so-and-so crying in the lunchroom, right? But it's the curiosity about why are we doing that? What problem are we trying to solve? What's the business trying to achieve? With very few exceptions, I'm not a big fan of need to know. If people ask, I want to answer their questions. And when you get back to the issue of where do I get information, I really love what Becky said about avoiding the hype and making sure you find objective sources. But I'll add to that, I also want to find the right subjective sources. That is, people who have an opinion that I trust. Right. So it may not be objective in the sense that it's purely factual, or they may be talking about a product or service that they have recently procured and used to great impact. I want to hear those opinions of the people I really trust. So it's finding your sources of reporting, you know, where you're going to read the news. And then finding those people whose opinions that you've learned to trust and respect, and hear what they have to say and ask them questions. And that's where you work your network. And at the risk of a, you know, shameless plug for ILTA, it's one of the things that we've been doing for 40 years is it's people providing, sharing information about products and services and problems and how we can solve them together, because we have a lot of concerns and issues in common across the delivery of legal services.
Thank you, Joy. And I was just going to add that finding people you trust really sits with me, because I think people, especially when you're in university, you're taught to, you know, follow certain journals, and different authors have different ways of explaining things. And it's really key to find explanations or people's perspectives that you can break down and consume yourself in a manner that will give you that working knowledge you need to speak confidently about the topic at hand. And that's more impressive than the, you know, following big words and really influential voices, perhaps.
And I think when you're forming an opinion on something, I mean, I can hear myself saying, you know, I may have done some reading or listened to some podcasts or sat in on a webinar and reached a conclusion about something. And then I find out that someone I really respect has reached a different conclusion. Then what I'm going to do is stop and say, I wonder if I missed something, and maybe I didn't. You know, I'm still entitled to my opinion and how I look at the data. But if there are people that you really trust, you know, voices that are powerful for you, that that have always given you great advice, then it's worth saying, you know, maybe I need to look a little bit more deeply at this issue or this product or whatever it is. And that also has value.
I'd like to ask you both to give me one top tip about building thought leadership as an emerging professional.
I would say in the current environment, it's really manage who you want to be in social media very purposefully. As you develop your thought leadership, is figure out who it is you want to be on social media, how it is you want people to view you. Are you an innovator? Are you a leader of people? Are you a gadfly? Are you a reporter? There are many roles you can play, but you have to determine how you want to be seen in the larger community and really curate your own social media postings and presence to support that identity within social media.
So my top tip is definitely know what you want about your career, out of your career, sorry, and trust yourself in knowing what that is. My thought behind that is that there are so many funnels in which we can easily find ourselves in when we're entering the profession, and then we find out at the end that that particular funnel isn't right for us, or as Joy was saying, the particular person on social media that doesn't really quite suit us. We don't want to be a reporter, we'd rather be a gadfly, or vice versa. So I think it's really important to know exactly what you want to be and what you want out of your professional experiences, and then go after that. It's very easy to be pulled in different directions because you feel you should be doing this or should be applying to a certain firm. And I speak from experience. It's very hard to navigate the myriad of wonderful firms that are out there and to find the one that is right for you. And the same applies to all professional decisions. So that's my top tip, is trust yourself and do what you want to do in your career, as much as you're allowed to.
So both of you have experience with this, so no excuses. I'm going to each ask you a question about curating a professional network. Joy's one is slightly personal because I have a closer relationship with Joy than you, Becky. I'm sorry for your loss. I was going to ask Joy, so you said in this podcast, you know, to find people you trust, and you've mentioned to me once to use my network or to learn how to use my network. So I was just asking you to share a bit more further on that in terms of how do I use my network as a professional?
I just introduced them. So just yesterday, for example, I took two people, Jackie Schaefer and Anita Sanger, that work in completely different realms. They both have an interest in AI, but it didn't, you know, wouldn't necessarily have naturally crossed. And I thought, wow, these are two people who would really benefit from a conversation. So I just sent an email to them and said, you two need to meet, go after it. Sometimes it's for a very specific purpose. Like I've talked to someone who is really looking for mentoring on public speaking. So I say, I know somebody who can do that. Donna Payne, for example, has been doing great, great stuff on managing your identity online. And so someone who's working with that, I'll say, here, let me introduce you to Donna, because she has some real skills there. And when you've created that trust within your network, then when you have a hard question to ask or a hard favor to ask, and an unreasonable request, if you will, then you can go out to your network. And it's amazing how much people want to give back and want to be part of doing something great for you or for somebody else. And then you can use your network to get what I call war stories instead of press clippings. When you need someone to tell you the 100% truth about something, whether it's a product or a service, whether it's about yourself, then when you've really established that network, you know that you have a source of truth about an amazing number of topics.
Yeah, that is absolutely spot on, because I think at one of our socials, a member said it's more about thinking how you can add value before you start thinking about the value that you can extract from your network. So thank you for that. And then I'll head to Becky now. You interview so many different people, and you can't just, this is not a surface level sort of engagement. You have to get them to share, and you have to get them to be willing to share. How do you build those relationships? Do you have any tips as far as that's concerned?
That's a really interesting question, because I'm amazed that people are so willing to share. I think the key is building trust between each other and building rapport. I've been lucky, 100% of my interviewees have been an absolute delight to interview. So there's been absolutely no trouble on that front. But also all of them have been honest and open. And because we managed to build that rapport, I hope that they felt able to share with me and to share with our other interviewers who have the same skills. They're very good at rapport building and follow-up questions to delve a little bit deeper into what the interviewee is talking about. But I think the key is about building trust, if that helps, Mercedes.
No, I think that you are right. It is about building trust. But I assume it can be quite hard when you're at the early stages of your career, simply because you have this whole fake it till you make it school of thought, and people respond to authenticity. So it can be quite hard to demonstrate that when you're quite conscious of creating this professional facade, and we're in this climate where the truth is what sells. People want to know who you are, and they want to understand you, and they want it to be honest. But when you haven't achieved much, you're much more tempted to pretend to be someone much more impressive. So I guess my question would be, where does the confidence begin in terms of building those relationships?
Yes, I completely get what you're saying. It is a massive catch-22. It's the classic, you can't get experience until you have experience problem. I can only speak from personal experience, but what gave me confidence was, oddly, knowing that I had value to offer and just diving in and just seeing what happened, really. When I started doing these interviews, I knew that I didn't know very much and that I was going to my interviewees to learn as well as to interview them. And so I did have to get over that barrier, in a sense, and keep getting over it each time. But I think people at the early stages of their careers can also gain confidence from the fact that the skills they already have can offer a lot of value to people. They already have a lot of skills from their degrees, whether that's writing in the case of interviews or podcasting like we're doing now. A lot of university students will have a lot more experience running digital media than I did, and are doing very creative things in the legal technology space already. There's a number of student websites that have been set up in lockdown that are going great guns at the moment. So I think what I put the stress on is that you can still offer value even if you don't have professional experience, because you can offer people space and airtime and a place to talk. In an emerging area like legal technology, it very quickly became clear that people were really excited to talk about their companies and their services, and it's never a bad thing to be asked to talk about it and to be reported on. So although it's a very specific solution and one very specific to the legal technology sector, the key point that I'd give is that when you're at the early stage of your career, you do have valuable skills. They're just not in a specific profession yet. You've still got the writing skills, the creative mindset that you kind of gained through your degree, and both of those, and you know, many other skills, speaking skills, analytical skills, those can be applied in creative ways to help you get started.
That's fantastic. I was going to say, Becky, that is such a great kind of summary from you, because you're essentially saying don't be shy if you haven't got, you know, that knowledge. If you're learning, be open and transparent about it. And I was going to actually direct to Joy how to do that in an internal network, because Joy, I think you just mentioned that you went to your, you know, colleagues and said, here are my skills, how can I help? And I'm just thinking, how on earth do you build that confidence when you're starting out to actually be that brave to say, this is me, this is my skills? You know, I know we had a keynote on the fear of rejection, but it'd be good to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that that power of rejection, and this was Zha Zhang, who was our keynote speaker, and his book, which has been a bestseller, is good reading for anybody. But I think it's also understanding that knowledge is power, and that asking for knowledge is powerful for you, but it's also powerful for the person you ask. One of the ways that you build confidence in yourself with other people is asking good questions. So maybe you don't feel like you have skills to bring to bear. And I agree with Becky, people underestimate their skills. And I think honestly, this is especially true of women. I just have to say that. I think women are very quick to undervalue themselves in some of the skills that they bring to the table. But it's also going up and saying to somebody, look, I don't know anything about this, but I really want to learn. And are you willing to teach me? And that makes people feel great that you see them as having expertise, that you would seek them out as a teacher. And if they don't feel like they're the right ones, a lot of times they'll say, you know what, I'm not the right person, but let me build your network and introduce you to this person over here. It's also the power of that. I'd also like to comment on something Becky said about skills that newer people to the job market can bring to bear. I was in a really interesting conversation at ILTAON with some associate general counsel of large corporations who regularly hear pitches from law firms. And they were talking about how much less comfortable the older lawyers, and I don't mean to be ageist, but just seem to be with the technology. And instead of pitching in person, where they have lots of experience and lots of skill, they're pitching in this medium of Zoom or whatever other video conference they're using, and they really lack confidence about it. And these are people who are very, very mature, very successful in their careers, yet they are struggling with this. And this is where younger people can say, you know what, I'm a digital native, this is what I do, I can help here. And it creates opportunities for people who are more familiar with the technology to shine. And this is another aspect of why the interest in legal technology can be great for a younger person, because it gives you an opportunity to bring the newest, freshest skills to bear also on a particular business problem.
As for Fresh Voices, this particular podcast, we spoke to loads of professionals working for service providers. And one thing that was very apparent was that this market is very client-driven, I'd say more than most. And poor law students, you kind of learn and you're taught to focus on intellectual ability. You shape it and you hone it for several years. And then you're thrown into this market where you're being asked to understand the needs of the client. And now it's also understanding technology as a service. So I just wanted to ask you both about this idea of who a lawyer is in terms of what it used to be and where you think this is going. Like, what will be the key defining characteristics that future lawyers will have or need to have? And this is general, you can just jump in at any point.
You know, that's a question that we're all asking. You know, the senior leaders at law firms are asking what they need for them for their next generation. I think it's as we look at the events of 2020 and into the future, where the kind of genie's out of the bottle on virtualizing everything from client pitches to client meetings to depositions to actually court proceedings are happening using technology, you're not going to be able to stuff that genie back in the bottle. Now, people will want to get back to in person. What's born out of necessity will get moderated into some blend of doing things in person and with technology, but the technology component is not going to go away. So I think someone who's new in their career needs to really embrace the opportunities that have been presented by our new reality. I refuse to say new normal, because normal implies things aren't changing very fast, and our world's changing every day. So is embracing the new reality of technology-enabled human interactions and really mastering the tools that come with that and understanding how you have to change your own techniques and to develop good techniques that work well when your interaction isn't face-to-face across a physical table with a cup of coffee, but is, you know, in a more virtual setting. And then I think the second thing is people needing to learn to be much more purposeful about everything to do with human interaction. We don't have as many accidental interactions now. You don't bump into people in the hallway or at the water cooler or wherever anymore. So it's understanding that those interactions are important and you have to create them rather than wait for them to happen organically.
And Joy, let me throw a spanner in the works here and ask you, do you think having cultural intelligence as a lawyer will be much, much more required? And by that, I mean being able to handle diverse interactions, because surely the workplace is changing and is much, much different now from what it used to be. So do you think that would be something, a skill perhaps to develop if you're an emerging lawyer perhaps?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, emotional intelligence in general is always important. I think that one of the issues that's getting a lot of attention now, and appropriately so, is unconscious bias. So it's being willing also to invest in yourself and understanding, because everybody has unconscious biases, even if you rather think that you don't, everyone does. And investing time and effort into understanding your own unconscious bias so that you can be a better contributor in a diverse workplace. That's a great point and a very important skill.
And now over to Becky.
I completely agree. And I'd like to pick up on your point, Mercedes, about the changing workplace. I think that the changing structure of the legal profession will have a massive impact on the skills that particularly junior lawyers are expected to have. One of the sort of shifts in the legal profession that had the biggest impact on my opinions on what skills we'll need to have is flexible resourcing and how it interacts with technology. And we can see that in the rise of, say, legal process outsourcing, where they use technology to ensure that people can work from less expensive jurisdictions. And the fact that clients are loving it, they're increasing their market share every day. And I think the impact that this will inevitably have, particularly in light of COVID, as we're all able to work remotely now, is that junior lawyers will be expected to have the skills that a senior associate would have. They'll be expected to be, as you said, Joy, more purposeful about making themselves into a more rounded lawyer at an earlier stage, because we'll all be working in a distributed way as we are now. So I think that the impact of COVID and the impact of technology will mean that we'll all have to be more flexible about the skills that we develop. And that includes technology, but it also includes several skills that lawyers are perceived to be less hot on, like project management. The skills that we'll have to develop will both change, but also the point at which we'll be expected to develop them will be pulled forward by quite a lot, as we'll be expected to be more purposeful about our career development and be standing on our own two feet as lawyers at an earlier stage as the market becomes more competitive.
Thank you both for that. And I wanted to ask us what, because I realize we haven't touched on this, international legal technology. You think we would speak about tech in particular? Let's pretend you're about to tweet about technology that you're excited about and you have 140 characters.
I think for me, I know exactly what it is straight away. And some people are going to hate me for this, but it's blockchain.
Oh,
if I have
no,
to tweet,
no,
I know, I'm so sorry. But it is, if I'm being very specific here, it's blockchain in finance. Because,
what?
Yeah, really, I mean, the change is already happening. It's already happening. I mean, trade finance is swiftly becoming even more and more blockchain enabled. And the decentralized finance movement is growing every day. I mean, maybe I'm behind the curve. Maybe blockchain is dead, as many other people say it is. But for me, whether it's in 10 years or 20 years, the concept is strong. If we can find ways of working around the energy consumption problem, which I know is one of the major issues surrounding blockchain infrastructures, I think decentralized finance will continue to grow. But
yeah, I did not expect to hear that in the whole day. I never thought I'd hear decentralized finance throughout the whole of today. So thank you for breaking boundaries on this podcast. No, I selectively avoid blockchain. I am just one of those kids that goes for like the glitchy ones. And but actually saying that, I think I'm just more focusing on cloud because of what ILTA has been doing. It's been very cloud driven, especially because of COVID. So I've kind of had this, my blinkers on as far as cloud is concerned. But Joy, I'll hand over to you because you're the head expert on this. So,
oh my gosh, I think I'm not going to be able to live up to my billing because I was sitting here thinking about that. I certainly echo the fact that blockchain is not irrelevant, as some people have said. So I'll add to what Becky was saying. The problem is it's becoming operationalized, which means it's not sexy anymore.
It means that it's
important because now it's being operationalized. It's just no longer, you know, glitzy and fun. I'm going to have kind of a boring one, but it's a problem that we're still wrestling with. Is I'm always excited to see real developments, real advances in document assembly. Because whether we like it or not, and whatever you call a document, law firms and lawyers and corporate law departments still make documents. They make documents of all kinds. And documents that you can make better first drafts faster, where the writing is better and clearer, where the precedents are checked more quickly and accurately, so that the lawyers are really focusing on the legal reasoning and solving the legal problem rather than spending a lot of time structuring documents that can be better reused. And especially as courts become more digital, what we mean by a document will become much looser, but it'll also mean that the structure, so that we can create structured data from unstructured data, becomes super important. So it's anything to do with how we redefine and advance documents. And that was way more than 140 characters, so sorry about that.
Well, Joe, I was going to say you kind of stuck to your character there and chose the most business-friendly development ever. Becky and I are dreaming wide, blockchain, cloud, and you're thinking about the most responsible and sensible solutions that will actually get people to do their jobs right.
I think it's just years of PTSD working in document processing as part of it, too.
Well said. And then my last questions for you are the fun ones. So now picture this: legal tech is a person with emotions and thoughts. What would legal tech be like as a person? And I'll start with Becky.
Damn, I knew you were going to start with me.
I had to.
Who's legal tech as a person and their thoughts and feelings? I think legal tech,
very fragile feeling, so be careful what you say.
I'll tread gently. I think they would be a bright, zingy sort of person, but who totally has their feet on the ground and is able to look into the future, not with a crystal ball, but also sees the practical side of things, and exactly as Joy has done, sees the business need for everything. And I don't know why, but I'm imagining them in a baseball cap. I have no idea why that's there, but but there we go.
Love it. Joy, do you see a baseball cap?
Well, you know, now that she says it, I do. But the person I was thinking of, I was actually thinking of a character from literature. And I'm probably very old-fashioned, and maybe people don't know this character. But I'm thinking about the character of Jane Eyre. And she's a very interesting character because she was unloved and orphaned as a child, which is often true of new technology, and finds a home and then grows into what they're going to be, and is always underestimating their potential, yet standing by what is right and can be done. And I think that's a good metaphor for legal technology because it often comes out of unloved places. You know, lawyers aren't necessarily fond of technology, but then the technology matures and it becomes kind of indispensable and valuable, but also need someone to believe in their potential. I don't know. If I'd had longer to think about it, I might have come up with something different. But that was the first character that popped into my mind.
I love that, Joy. Jane Eyre's
one. I love it too. Yeah.
Would this person be a member of ILTA?
Well, yes, of course, absolutely. You know, and there's room for the cool kids in the baseball caps and the quiet and introspective ones too. They're all going to find a home at ILTA.
I sense some bias, you two.
Yeah, sorry. That was the shameless commercial, Becky. Sorry about that.
I wish I had like a tune to cue in, like a nice little jingle. That's ILTA. Okay, so my last thing is, we've had too much time on our hands to, you know, develop new interests, go do new stuff, build cabins, you know, create cabbages. Have you been reading, watching, or listening to anything new over the last month? Have you had time?
Well, I've actually been reading a really interesting book. I just haven't finished it yet. I like to go back and forth between fiction and nonfiction. I love both, but I'll do a bunch of fiction for a while, and then I'll move to a bunch of nonfiction. If any of you have read the Hunger Games books or seen the Hunger Games movies, it came out in May. It was a relatively new prequel to the Hunger Games about the backstory of President Snow. And it's extremely well written and engaging. And it's a really personal story. I'm not quite done with it yet, but I've enjoyed it tremendously. So if you're a fan of that kind of stuff, I highly recommend it.
Fantastic. I've never actually read the Hunger Games, but I've seen a couple of the films.
You have to read it.
I must. It's funny. What I've been reading recently is actually quite technology related. It's called The Machine Stops. It's a short story by E.M. Forster. And basically the concept is everybody lives underground in these sealed pods and communicates through screens and doesn't go outside.
Is this a blockchain reference I'm missing?
Maybe it is. Basically, not to spoil the ending of the story, but the machine stops and everything goes wrong. It's all controlled by a machine, and everyone is ruled by the machine. But it's a really interesting story.
You know, and I love E.M. Forster, so you now turned me on to that.
Awesome.
you both of you need to give us links to include in the accompanying article so we can get people to check them out. They sound really good. I've already told you I want to read that as well, so I completely missed that. Right, ladies, so I just wanted to bring this to an end and to just say thank you so much for your willingness to share and your time in, you know, letting us know more about how you got to be the amazing and just lovely, inspirational people that you are. And we would welcome you back anytime to share with us on this series. Any final closing comments, ladies?
Thank you so much.
I was glad to get to meet Becky. So that's been fantastic. Thank you.
Likewise, Joy. Fantastic to meet you. And thank you, Mercedes. It's been a really fun conversation.
Oh, that's great. And I just want to let you know that I will always be Joy's favorite. So do not think of it, Becky.
Damn.
Okay, I had to come off mute to laugh about that because that was just too funny not to.
Yeah, it was.
Right, so it's a wrap, Katie, and we're done.
Thanks for tuning into this ILTA Radio Fresh Voices episode. Check out more episodes and other ILTA podcasts on iltanet.org and all other podcast platforms.